news was going on ahead. Dwarfs were pouring out of the entrance to downtown when the Duke and Duchess arrived. There were dwarfs behind them now. They were being swept along, and all the time hands reached out to touch the scone as it passed. Dwarfs crowded into the elevator with them. Down below, the roar of conversation stopped abruptly as Vimes stepped out and raised the scone above his head. Then the rock echoed and re-echoed to one enormous cheer. "They can't even see it," thought Vimes. "To most of them it's a tiny white dot." And that was what the plotters had known, wasn't it? You don't have to steal something to hold it hostage. "They are to be arrested." D was hurrying forward, with more guards behind him. "Again," said Vimes. He kept the stone aloft. "You attempted to kill the king. You escaped from your cell." "That's something about which we could hear some more evidence," said Vimes as calmly as he could. The scone was heavy. "You can't keep people in the dark all the time, D." "You shall certainly not see the king." "Then I will drop the scone." "Do so. It won't—" Vimes heard the gasp of the dwarfs behind him. "It won't what?" he said quietly. "It won't matter. But this is the scone." One of the dwarfs that had accompanied them from the embassy shouted something, and several others took it up. "President is on your side," Cheery translated. "They say they can always kill you after you've seen the king." "Well, not exactly what I was hoping, but it'll have to do." Vimes looked at Dee again. "You said you wanted me to find the thing, didn't you? And now, how fitting that I return it to its rightful owner."
"You may give it to me," said Dee, pulling himself up to the height of Vimes's chest.
"Absolutely not," snapped Lady Sybil. "When Ironhammer returned the scone to Bloodaxe, would he have given it to Slogrim?" There was general chorus of dissent.
"Of course not," said Dee. "Slogrim was a trait—"
He stopped.
"I think," said Vimes, "that we had better see the king, don't you?" "You can't demand that."
Vimes indicated the press of dwarfs behind them.
"You're going to be amazed at how difficult it's going to be for you explaining that to them," he said.
It took half an hour to see the king. He had to be roused. He had to dress. Kings don't hurry. In the meantime, Vimes and Sybil sat in an anteroom on chairs too small for them, surrounded by dwarfs who weren't themselves sure if they were a prisoner escort or an honour guard. Other dwarfs were peering around the doorway. Vimes could hear the buzz of excited conversation. They weren't wasting much time looking at him. Their gaze always fell on the scone that he held in his lap. It was clear that most of them hadn't even seen it before. "You poor little sods," he thought. "This is what you all believe in. And before the day's out, you're going to be told it's just a bad fake. You'll see it's a forgery. And that about wraps it up for your little world, doesn't it? I set out to solve a crime, and I'm going to end up committing a bigger one. I'm going to be lucky to get out of here alive, aren't I?" A door was rolled open. A couple of what Vimes thought of as the heavy dwarfs stepped through and gave everyone the official professional look which said that for your comfort and convenience, we have decided not to kill you right at this very moment. The king entered, rubbing his hands.
"Ah, Your Excellency," he said, pronouncing the word as a statement of fact rather than a welcome. "I see you have something that belongs to us."
Dee detached himself from the crowd at the door.
"I must make a serious accusation, sire," he said.
"Really? Bring these people into the law room, under guard, of course."
He swept away. Vimes looked at Sybil and shrugged. They followed the king, leaving the hubbub of the main cavern behind. Once again Vimes was in the room with too many shelves and too few candles. The king sat down.
"Is the scone heavy, Your Excellency?"
"Yes."
"It is weighted with history, see? Put it down on the table with extreme care, please. And D?"
"That thing," said D, pointing a finger, "that thing is a fake, a copy, a forgery, made in Ankh-Morpork. Part of a plot which I am sure can be proven involves my Lord Vimes. It is not the scone."
The king lifted a candle a little closer to the scone and gave it a critical look from several angles.
"I have seen the scone many times before," he said at last, "and I would say that this appears to be the true thing and the whole of the thing."
"Sire, I demand, that is, I advise you to demand a closer inspection, sire."
"Really?" said the king mildly. "Well, I am not an expert, see, but we are fortunate, are we not, that Albrecht Albrechtsen is here for the coronation. All of Dwarfton knows, I think, that he is the authority on the scone and its history. Have him summoned. I dare say he is close at hand. I should think just about everyone is on the other side of that door now.
Indeed, sire.
The look of triumph on Dee's face as he swept past Vimes was almost obscene.
I think we're going to need another song to get us out of this one, dear, murmured Vimes.
I'm afraid I can only remember that one, Sam. The others were mainly about gold.
Dee returned with Albrecht and a following of other senior and somewhat magisterial dwarfs.
Ah, Albrecht, said the king. Do you see this on the table? It is claimed that this is not the true thing and the whole of the thing. Your opinion is sought, please.
The king nodded at Vimes.
My friend understands more porky than your excellency. He just chooses not to pollute the air by speaking it.
Just his way, see? Albrecht glared at Vimes and then stepped up to the table. He looked at the scone from several angles. He moved the candles and leaned down so that he could inspect the crust closely. He took a knife from his belt, tapped the scone with it, and listened with ferocious care to the notes produced. He turned the scone over. He sniffed it. He stood back. His face screwed up in a scowl, and then he said,
"Hagrads!"
The dwarfs muttered among themselves, and then one by one nodded. To Vimes's horror, Albrecht chipped a tiny piece from the scone and put it in his mouth.
"Plaster," thought Vimes, "fresh plaster from Ankh Morpork, and Dee will talk his way out of it."
Albrecht spat the piece out into his hand and looked up at the ceiling for a moment while he chewed. Then he and the king exchanged a long, thoughtful stare.
"P'akga,"
said Albrecht at last.
"A p'akga ad."
Behind the outbreak of murmuring, Vimes heard Cheery translate,
"It is the thing and the whole of—"
"Yes, yes," said Vimes,
and he thought, "By gods, we're good.
Ankh Morpork, I'm proud of you. When we make a forgery, it's better than the real damn thing.
Unless I've missed something."
"Thank you, gentlemen," said the king.
He waved a hand. The dwarfs filed out reluctantly, with many backward glances at Vimes.
"Dee, please fetch my axe from my chamber, will you?" the king said. "Yourself, please. I don't want anyone else to handle it. Your excellency, you and your lady will remain here. Your dwarf must leave, however. The guards are to be posted on the door. Dee?"
The idea's taster hadn't moved.
"Dee?"
"What? Yes, sire."
"You do what I tell you."
"Sire, this man's ancestor once killed a king."
"I dare say the family have got it out of their system. Now do as I say."
The dwarf hurried away, turning to stare at Vimes for a moment as he left the cave. The king sat back.
"Sit down, your monitorship. And your lady, too."
He put one elbow on the arm of the chair and cupped his chin on his hand.
"And now, Mr. Vimes, tell me the truth. Tell me everything. Tell me the truth that is more valuable than small amounts of gold."
"I'm not sure I know it any more," said Vimes.
"Ah, a good start," said the king. "Tell me what you suspect, then."
"Sire, I'd swear that thing is as fake as a tin shilling."
"Oh, really?"
"The real scone wasn't stolen, it was destroyed. I reckon it was smashed and ground up and mixed with the sand in its cave. You see, sire, if people see that something's gone, and then you turn up with something that looks like it, they'll think, 'This must be it, it must be, because it isn't where we thought it was.' People are like that. Something disappears, and something very much like it turns up somewhere else, and they think it must somehow have got from one place to the other."
Vimes pinched his nose.
"I'm sorry, I haven't had much sleep."
"You are doing very well for a sleepwalking man."
The thief was working with the werewolves, I think. They were behind the Sons of Aggie Hammer Thief business. They were going to blackmail you off the throne. Well, you know that. To keep Oberwald in the dark. If you didn't step down, there'd be a war. And if you did, Albrecht would get the fake scone."
"What else do you think you know?"
"Well, the fake was made in Ankh Morpork. We're good at making things. I think someone had the maker killed, but I can't find out more until I get back. I will find out."
"You make things very well in your city, then, to fool Albrecht. How do you think that was done?"
"You want the truth, sire?"
"By all means."
"Is it possible that Albrecht was involved?"
"Find out where the money is, my old sergeant used to say." "Ah, who was it said, 'Where there are policemen, you find crimes'?"
Me, sir, but—"
"Let us find out. Dee should have had time to think. Ah!"
The door opened. the ideas taster stepped through, carrying a dwarfish axe. It was a mining axe with a pick point on one side, in order to go prospecting, and a real axe blade on the other, in case anyone tried to stop you.
"Call the guards in, Dee," said the king, "and His Excellency's young dwarf. These things should be seen, see?"
"Oh, good grief," thought Vimes, watching Dee's face as the others shuffled in. "There must be a manual. Every copper knows how this goes. You let 'em know you know they've done something wrong, but you don't tell 'em what it is, and you certainly don't tell 'em how much you know, and you keep 'em off balance, and you just talk quietly and—"
"Place your hands upon the scone, Dee."
Dee spun around. "Sire?"
"Place your hands upon the scone. Do as I say. Do it now."
"You keep the threat in view, but you never refer to it. Oh, no. Because there's nothing you can do to them that their imagination isn't already doing to themselves. And you keep it up until they break, or in the case of my old dame school, until they feel their boots get damp. And it doesn't even leave a mark."
"Tell me about the death of Longfinger, the candle captain," said the king, after Dee, with a look of hollow apprehension, had touched the scone.
The words rushed out.
"Oh, as I told you, sire, he—"
"If you do not keep your hands pressed upon the scone, Dee, I will see to it they are fixed there. Tell me again."
He took his own life, sire, out of shame."
The king picked up his axe and turned it so that the long point faced outwards.
"Tell me again."
Now Vimes could hear Dee's breathing short and fast.
"He took his own life, sire."
The king smiled at Vimes.
"There's an old superstition, Your Excellency, that since the scone contains a grain of truth, it will glow red-hot if a lie is told by anyone touching it. Of course, in these moral modern times, I shouldn't think anyone believes it."
He turned to Dee.
"Tell me again," he whispered.
As the axe moved slightly, the reflected light of the candles flashed along the blade.
"He took his own life, he did."
"Oh, yes, you said. Thank you," said the king. "And do you recall, Dee, when Slogrum sent false word of Bloodaxe's death in battle to Ironhammer, causing Ironhammer to take his own life in grief? Where was the guilt?"
"It was Slogrum, sire,"
said Dee promptly. Vimes suspected the answer had come straight from some rote-remembered teaching.
"Yes."
The king let the word hang in the air for a while, and then went on. "And who gave the order to kill the craftsman in Ankh-Morpork?"
"Sire," said Dee.
"Who gave the order to kill the craftsman in Ankh-Morpork?"
The king's tone did not change. It was the same comfortable, sing-song voice. He sounded as though he would carry on asking the question forever.
"I know nothing about—"
"Guards, press his hands firmly against the scone."
They stepped forward. Each one took an arm.
"Again, Dee, who gave the order?"
Dee writhed as if his hands were burning. Vimes could see the skin whiten on the dwarf's hands as he strained to lift them up from the stone.
"But it's a fake. I'd swear he destroyed the real one, so he knows it's a fake, surely. It's just a lump of plaster, probably still damp in the middle."
Vimes tried to think. The original scone had been in the cave, hadn't it? Was it? If it wasn't, where had it been? The werewolves thought they had a fake, and it certainly hadn't left his sight since. He tried to think through the fog of fatigue. He'd half wondered once whether the original scone had been the one in the Dwarf Bread Museum. That would have been the way to keep it safe. No one would try to steal something that everyone knew was a fake. The whole thing was the fifth elephant. Nothing was what it seemed. It was all a fog. Which one was real?
"Who gave the order, Dee?" said the king.
"Not me. I said they must take all necessary steps to preserve secrecy."
"To whom did you say this?"
"I can give you names."
"Later you will, I promise you, boyo," said the king. "And the werewolves?"
"The baroness suggested it, that is true."
"Uberwald for the werewolves, ah, yes. Joy through strength. I expect they promised you all sorts of things. You may take your hands off the scone, I do not wish to distress you further."
"But why?"
"My predecessors spoke highly of you. You are a dwarf of power and influence. And then you let yourself become a paw of the werewolves. Why?"
"Why should they be allowed to get away with it?"
Dee snapped, his voice breaking with the strain. The king looked across at Vimes.
"Oh, I suspect the werewolves will regret that they—"
he began.
"Not them! The ones in Ankh-Morpork, wearing makeup and dresses and abominable things.
Dee pointed a finger at Ciri.
Ha, ack! How can you even look at her? You let her,
and Vimes had seldom heard a word sprayed with so much venom,
her flaunt herself here. And it's happening everywhere because people have not been firm, not obeyed, have let the old ways slide. Everywhere there are reports. They're eating away at everything dwarfish with their soft clothes and paint and beastly ways. How can you be king and allow this? Everywhere they are doing it and you do nothing. Why should they be allowed to do this?
Now Dee was sobbing.
I can't!
Vimes saw that Ciri, to his amazement, was blinking back tears.
I see, said the king. Well, I suppose that is an explanation.
He nodded to the guards.
Take her away. Some things must wait a day or two.
Ciri saluted suddenly.
Permission to go with her, sire.
What on earth for, young dwarf?
I expect she likes someone to talk to, sire. I know I would.
Indeed. I see your commander has no objection. Off you go, then.
The king leaned back when the guards had left with their prisoner and the prisoner's new counsellor.
Well, your excellency?
This is the real Scone?
You are not certain?
Dee was.
Dee is in a difficult state of mind.
The king looked at the ceiling.
I think I will tell you this because, your excellency, I really do not want you going through the rest of your time here asking silly questions. Yes, this is the true Scone.
But how could...
Wait! So was the one that was, yes, ground to dust in the cave by Dee in her madness,
the king went on.
So were the, let me see, 5 before that. Still untouched by time after 1500 years? What romantics we dwarfs are! Even the very best dwarf bread crumbles after a few hundred.
Fakes,
said Vimes.
They were all fakes.
Suddenly the king was holding his mining axe again.
This, my lord, is my family's axe. We have owned it for almost 900 years, see? Of course, sometimes it needed a new blade, and sometimes it has required a new handle, new designs on the metalwork, a little refreshing of the ornamentation. But is this not the 900-year-old axe of my family? And because it has changed gently over time, it is still a pretty good axe, you know. Pretty good. Will you tell me this is a fake, too?
He sat back again. Vimes remembered the look on Albrecht's face.
A new? Oh, yes. A number of more senior dwarfs know. The knowledge runs in families. The first Scone crumbled after 300 years, when the king of the time touched it. My ancestor was a guard who witnessed it, see? He got accelerated promotion, you could say. I'm sure you understand me. After that, we were a little more prepared. We would have been looking for a new one in 50 years or so in any case. I'm glad one was made in the large dwarf city of Ankh-Morpork, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if it turns out to be an excellent keeper. Look, they've even got the currents right, see?
But Albrecht could have exposed you.
Exposed what? He is not king, but I will be very surprised if one of his family is not king again in the fullness of time. What goes around comes around, as the Igors say.
The king leaned forward.
You have been labouring under a misapprehension, I reckon. You think that because Albrecht dislikes Ankh-Morpork and has old-fashioned ideas, he is a bad dwarf. But I have known him for 200 years. He is honest and honourable, more so than me, that I am sure of. 500 years ago, he would have made a fine king. Today, perhaps not. Perhaps, the axe of my ancestors needs a different handle. But now I am king, and he accepts that with all his heart, because if he did not, he'd think he wasn't a dwarf, see? Of course he will now oppose me at every turn. Being low king was never an easy job. But, to use one of your metaphors, we are all floating in the same boat. We may certainly try to push one another over the side, but only a maniac like Dee would make a hole in the bottom.
Corporal Littlebottom thought there'd be a war, said Vimes weakly.
Well, there are always hotheads. but while we argue about who steers the boat, we don't deny that it's an important voyage.
I see you are tired. Let your good lady take you home.
But as a nightcap, what is it, Your Excellency, that Ankh-Morpork wants?
Ankh-Morpork wants the names of the murderers, mumbled Vimes.
No, that is what Commander Vimes wants. What is it that Ankh-Morpork wants? Gold?
So often it is gold, or iron, perhaps. You use a lot of iron.
Vimes blinked. His brain had finally given up. There was nothing left any more. He wasn't certain he could even stand up. He remembered a word.
Fat, he said blankly.
Aha, the fifth elephant. Are you sure? There's some good iron now. Iron makes you strong. Fat only makes you slippery.
Fat, parroted Vimes, feeling the darkness closing in. Lots of fat.
Well, certainly. The price is 10 Ankh-Morpork cents a barrel, but, Your Excellency, since I have come to know you, I feel that perhaps...
5 cents a barrel for grade one high-rendered, 3 cents for grade two, 10 cents per barrel for heavy tallow, safe and delivered to Ankh-Morpork, said Sybil. And all from the Schmalzberg bend levels, and measured on the iron crust scale. I have some doubt about the long-term quality of the big tusk wells.
Vimes tried to focus on his wife. She seemed inexplicably a long way away.
What? I caught up with some reading when I was in the embassy, Sam. Those notebooks. Sorry.
Would you beggar us, madam? Said the king, throwing up his hands.
We may be flexible on delivery, said Lady Sybil.
Klatch would pay at least 9 for grade one, said the king.
But the Klatchian ambassador isn't sitting here, said Sybil.
The king smiled.
Or married to you, my lady, much to his loss. 6, 5, and 15.
6. Dropping to 5 after 20,000. 3.5 across the board for grade 2. I can give you 13 on tallow.
Acceptable, but give me 14 on white tallow, and I'll allow 7 on the new pale suets we're finding. They're making an acceptable candle, look you.
6, I'm afraid. You haven't plumbed the full extent of those deposits, and I think it may be reasonable to expect high levels of scrattle and BCBs in the lower layers. Besides, I think your forecasts about the amount of those deposits are erring on the optimistic side.
What BCBs? Murmured Vimes.
Burnt crunchy bits, said Sybil. Mostly unbelievably huge and ancient animals deep-fried.
You astonish me, Lady Sybil, said the king. I did not know you were trained in fat extraction.
Cooking Sam's breakfasts is an education in itself, Your Majesty.
Oh, well, far be it for a mere king to argue. 6, then. Price to remain stable for 2 years.
The king saw Sybil's mouth open.
All right, 3 years. I'm not an unreasonable king.
Price is on the dock.
How can I refuse?
Agreed, then.
The paperwork will be with you in the morning. And now we really must go our separate ways, said the king. I can see His Excellency has had a long day. Ankh-Morpork will be swimming in fat. I can't imagine what you'll use it all for.
Make light, said Vimes. And, as darkness fell at last, fell forward gently into the welcoming arms of sleep.
Sam Vimes awoke to the smell of hot fat. Softness enveloped him. It practically imprisoned him. For a moment he thought it was snow, except that snow wasn't usually this warm. Finally he identified it as the cloud-like softness of the mattress on the ambassadorial bed. He let his attention drift back to the fat smell. It had overtones. There was a definite burnt component. Since Sam Vimes's spectrum of gastronomic delight mainly ranged from well-fried to caramelized, it was decidedly promising. He shifted position and regretted it immediately. Every muscle in his body squealed in protest. He lay still and waited for the fire in his back to die down. Bits and pieces of the previous 2 days assembled themselves in his head. Once or twice he winced. Had he really gone through the ice like that? Was it Sam Vimes who'd stepped up to fight the werewolf, despite the fact that the thing was strong enough to bend a sword in a circle? And had Sybil won a lot of fat off the king? And, well, here he was in a nice warm bed, and by the smell of it, there was breakfast on the way. Another piece of recollection floated into place. Vimes groaned and forced his legs out of the bed. No, Wolfgang couldn't have survived that, surely. Naked,
He staggered into the bathroom and spun the huge taps. Hot, pungent water gushed out. A minute later, he was lying full length again. It was rather too hot, but he could remember the snows, and maybe from now on he could never be hot enough. Some of the pain washed away. Someone rapped on the door.
"It's me, Sam."
"Sybil?" She came in, carrying a couple of very large towels and some fresh clothes.
"Good to see you up again. Igor's frying sausages. He doesn't like doing it. He thinks they should be boiled. And he's doing slumpy and thicken haddock and distressed pudding. I didn't want the food to go to waste, you see. I don't think I want to stay for the rest of these celebrations."
"I know what you mean. How's Carrot?"
"Well, he says he doesn't want sausages."
"What? He's all... he's up?"
"Sitting up, at least. Igor's a marvel. Angua said it was a bad break, but he's just got some sort of device that... well, Carrot's not even got a sling on now."
"Sounds a useful man to have around," said Vimes, pulling on his civilized trousers.
"Angua says Igor's got an ice house in the cellars, and his frozen jars of... well, let's just say he suggested you might like liver and onions for breakfast, and I said no."
"I like liver and onions," said Vimes. He thought about it. "Up until now, anyway."
"I think the king wants us to go as well, in a polite way. A lot of very respectful dwarfs came round here with paperwork first thing this morning."
Vimes nodded grimly. It made sense. If he was king, he'd want Vimes out of here too. "Here's some grateful thanks. A nice trading agreement. Terribly sorry to see you go. Do call again, only not too soon." Breakfast was everything he'd dreamed of. Then he went to see the invalid. Carrot was pale, grey under the eyes, but smiling. He was sitting up in bed, drinking fatsup.
"Hello, Mr. Vimes. We won then. Didn't Angua tell you?"
"She went off with the wolves when I was asleep," Lady Sybil said.
Vimes recounted the events of the night as best he could. Afterwards, Carrot said,
"Gavin was a very noble creature. I'm sorry he's dead. I'm sure we'd have got on well."
"You mean every word of it," Vimes thought. "I know you do.
But it works out all right for you, doesn't it? It always does.
If it had been the other way about, if it had been Gavin that attacked Wolf first, then I know it would have been you that went over the falls with the bastard. But it wasn't you, was it? If you were dice, you'd always roll sixes. And the dice don't roll themselves. If it wasn't against everything he wanted to be true about the world, Vimes might just then have believed in destiny-controlling people. And gods helped the other people who were around when a big destiny was alive in the world, bending every poor bugger around itself. Out loud, he said,
"Poor old Gasboat went over too."
"How? What was he doing?"
You could say he had our lad's full attention. A real street fighter. Poor little soul, he was a good dog at heart."
And once again, words that would have sounded trite and wrong on anyone else's lips were redeemed by the way Carrot said them.
"And what about Tantony?" said Vimes.
"Left this morning," Lady Sybil said.
"Good grief! And Wolfgang played noughts and crosses on his chest.
Igor's a dab hand with a needle, sir."
Afterwards, a thoughtful Sam Vimes stepped out into the coachyard. An Igor was already holding the luggage.
Which one are you?" said Vimes.
"Igor, master."
"All right. And, are you happy here, Igor? We could do with a man of your talents in the watch, and no mistake."
Igor looked down from the top of the coach.
"In Ankh-Morpork, master? My word! Everyone wants to go to Ankh-Morpork, master. It's a very tempting offer, but I know where my duty lies, your excellency. I must get the place ready for the next excellency."
"Oh, surely."
"However, fortuitously, my nephew Igor is looking for a position, master. He should do well in Ankh-Morpork. He's rather too modern for Oberveld, that's for sure."
"Good lad, is he?"
"His heart's in the right place. I know that for certain, sir."
Good. Well, get a message to him, then. We're leaving as soon as we can."
"He will be so excited, sir. I've heard that in Ankh-Morpork, bodies just lie around in the streets for anyone to take away."
"It's not quite as bad as that, Igor."
"Isn't it? Oh, well, you can't have everything. I'll tell him directly."
Igor lurched off in a sort of high-speed totter.
"I wonder why they all walk like that," thought Vimes. "They must have one leg shorter than the other.
Either that or they're not good at choosing boots.
Thank you.